This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Tuesday, May the 1st, coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock. It's been 4 years to the day since President Bush declared that major combat operations in Iraq were over. But U.S. troops are still in Iraq. In fact, April 2007 was one of the deadliest for U.S. troops in a long time. The worst this year, 104 American troops killed. President Bush has called for a troop surge to help stabilize the country, while Congress, on the other hand, passed a bill to tie funds for the war to a pullout goal of 2008. This hour, we'll talk about how and when the U.S. mission in Iraq will really be accomplished. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. We'll welcome your thoughts and questions about whether you think President Bush has the right vision for ending the war in Iraq, or whether you side with Congress on this one, tying funds to a pullout goal of 2008. And we'll also talk about what former CIA Director George Tenet had to say about the administration pushing this country into a war with Iraq, coming up this hour with our guest, and we are happy to have him with us, Dale Hirschspring, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer. He is the author of a number of books. He's working on a new one that will be entitled The Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, the Neocons, and the American Military. It's due to be released by the end of the year. And Professor Hirschspring joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So mission was not accomplished 4 years ago today.
No, it was not. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it. Most of all, I think it was Donald Rumsfeld's interference in the process. From the very beginning, a refusal to send enough troops, ignoring Phase 4, and then I think the Army has a certain cost of the whole thing, because the strategy that's being called now the so-called surge is fundamentally different from anything we've ever done. Had we used a policy like that 4 years ago, we might well have been home 2 years ago, but that was not the case. It was hitting a fly with a sledgehammer, and that kill one terrorist and you create 10 more.
Yeah, so is it too late?
Well, I mean, the question is militarily, no, politically, probably. I've talked to Petraeus about this several times, and I think he's the right person. I know the people who are around him, some of his senior advisors. Counterinsurgency is working. The problem is, it is a very slow process. So certainly the Brits found that out in Malaya. And when he comes back in September, the Democrats are going to say it's over with, and it's not going to be over with. And the Republicans Republicans will want to say it's over with, and it won't be. And the Democrats are going to say, well, it's still going on, and of course it will be. And if they cut, this kind of thing means really winning over the hearts and minds, to use an old phrase, of the local population. That takes time. It's certainly working in Anbar province, because there the sheiks have had enough of al-Qaeda, and it used to be almost an al-Qaeda stronghold, and now the sheiks are basically turning the al-Qaeda people in, and that's changing the whole correlation of forces, at least in Anbar.
Yeah. And didn't General Petraeus say that it's going to get worse in Iraq before it gets better?
Well, yeah, and I think what he's saying is that because this kind of a policy will work, and because, let's face it, the insurgents watch American television just as well as you and I do, and they know exactly how to play the media, and so they're going to throw everything they've got to try and make the situation worse until they're eventually taken down. And so it's not surprising. I mean, Sadr is not going to be happy about having his whole mighty army be taken apart, so you're going to get them fighting, and you'll get everybody else fighting. And eventually the idea of counterinsurgency is that you will eventually win these people over, and certainly this happened in some parts of Baghdad.
Yeah. Well, let me take a short pause, and then we will continue talking with Dale Herspring, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University. We're talking about the fourth anniversary of the so-called mission accomplished speech by President Bush. Today, the president is heading to U.S. Central Command headquarters to huddle with commanders running the Iraq War. He will also be getting a bill that Congress will be sending him. Today, he will get the funding bill that will order troops to begin withdrawing later this year. The president will veto the bill tomorrow and then meet with congressional leaders on how to resolve the impasse over funding for the war. We'll talk with Professor Herspring about that impasse when we return from this weather break. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 17 minutes past 7 o'clock now on this Tuesday, May the 1st. The fourth anniversary of President Bush saying that major combat operations in Iraq were over, the so-called mission accomplished speech. Today, the anniversary coincides with the day that Congress will be sending the president a funding bill that would include an order that troops begin withdrawing from Iraq later this year and a complete withdrawal by 2008. President Bush will veto this bill, and the House will try to override it, but the veto will be sustained. The president will meet tomorrow with congressional leaders to discuss the next step. We're talking with Dale Herspring, who is a professor of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, and author of many books. And Professor Herspring, give us your comments on this this showdown, this impasse between Congress and the president over this funding bill that includes the troop withdrawal language. You think President Bush has to veto this?
Oh, he will. He'll veto it. Look, I spent too many years in Washington not to become very cynical. This is the game being played. The game is the outcome is the 2008 election. And what the Democrats are trying to do, aside from your feelings about for or against the war, is to saddle Republicans with Bush's war. That so far, the polls suggest it's not working, that Hillary and Obama are still behind Giuliani and McCain in a number of key states. He'll veto it. They'll then get together, and the Democrats are not going to go do this again. What they'll do is come up with some sort of a compromise thing, because look, when Vietnam, it took them over 10 years to get rid of the anti-military defeatist attitude. When we withdrew from there, now they don't want to. They certainly don't want that to happen again, and so they'll come up with some sort of a goals-oriented statement, but there won't be any specific date.
Yeah, but the polls also show that the American people side more with Congress's strategy here, or at least approach, wanting the troops to withdraw.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But what one of the ironic things is, that does not translate into we want to vote in a Democrat for president, because it tends to be focused on individuals. And Giuliani and McCain are both not. I'm surprised myself, because I think the Democratic strategy made sense, but it's not working in that context. The American people want us out of Iraq. You're absolutely right, and they're blaming Bush for that, not for some reason the Republicans, although if you ask them who would do a better job, Republicans or Democrats, they'll say Democrats, and yet you say who you're going to vote for, Giuliani or Ms. Clinton, and the answer would be Giuliani.
Yeah. So you're predicting that when the president meets with congressional leaders to talk about the next step, that they will come to some sort of compromise, maybe funding with maybe some benchmarks, but not a timetable for withdrawal?
Yeah, benchmarks, sort of the things that we expect to see, but then if they don't see it, they'll still be what the Washington calls wiggle room, and that is that there'll still be an option. If they don't get it, the president can does not have to pull troops out. He'll have the flexibility to say such and such has happened, therefore we have to do X or Y.
Yeah. I do want to talk to you about George Tenet's comments, but we have lots of callers, and let me take a couple. Steve in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. I just wanted to comment about the so-called mission accomplished. In my mind, in a lot of people's mind, we did accomplish something there so far. We did topple Saddam Hussein. He's been executed. So in that sense, we toppled the regime, and that was our goal. We did also get a new government in there, and it's obviously unstable. The problem a lot of us are having out here is that there doesn't seem to be a coherent plan by either the Democrats or President Bush. One is all military. We're going to have the surge. We're going to victory, blah, blah, blah. And then the Democrats, we're going to have strategic deployment, which translates in a lot of people's minds to just withdrawing gracefully and letting the country, you know, go its way. And I don't think either of those options are acceptable to the American people. We want a diplomatic solution, and we also want our military to prevail and support them in trying to stabilize this country. So I have never understood why the State Department didn't take over after May 1st 4 years ago and take a more active role in the diplomatic side. Does your guest have a comment?
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, you threw a whole number of me. The reason the State Department didn't take over was because the Navy says the control for the action was in the Defense Department. And yes, it would have been better if it had not been there, if defense had worked together, but with state. But in fact, Rumsfeld would not permit state to have much of a role in it. As far as the coherent plan, the approach taken by Petraeus. And my feeling is if we'd done that 4 years ago, we probably would have been out 2 years ago. But it is political as well as military. That's the whole idea. It's not just a surge of the Democrats keep putting it up as just more troops. Well, it's not a case of just more troops. It's a case of an entirely different way of fighting a war. And it's as political as it is military. And that's the whole difference between that and what the Army has been doing for 4 years.
Yeah. What about Steve's comments that the mission of toppling Saddam Hussein was accomplished?
That's a good point. In fact, that whole thing came from Tommy Franks, which he admits in his book. They thought it was a mistake, the idea of having that thing on board the ship. In terms of combat operations, in terms of what you would call the phase 1, 2, 3 of a military operation, yes, it was finished. It was won. It was done. We toppled Saddam. The problem that you run into is it takes so long for people under that kind of a regime for that long to come out of it when they don't have many of the political culture that supports the kind of openness and compromise that we take for granted.
And now, Professor Hirschspring, would you conclude or agree that what's going on now is a civil war?
Yes and no. I mean, there's no question that the civil war is going on, but there is also another war going on, which is against Al Qaeda. And the problem that you have with the Democratic strategy is we're going to stay and fight Al Qaeda. Well, if we're going to stay and fight Al Qaeda, then I don't know what we'd be doing differently from what we're doing now, because Anbar province was almost entirely against Al Qaeda, and a considerable amount of the car bombs we're running into is Al Qaeda as well. So it's very hard to separate Al Qaeda from the civil war, but I certainly think there's anybody argues now that there hasn't been a civil war going on. The death squads on one side, the death squads on the other side. Yes, I would say there's a civil war going on.
Hey, did you hear that there are reports that the leader of Al Qaeda in Iraq has been killed, according to the Iraqi government?
Yeah, I heard that this morning, and you know, that's just apparently it was not by us or by the Iraqis, but by another rival terrorist group that killed him. But, you know, my view is I'll take it wherever I can get it. And if they want to kill each other off, that's all the better.
But usually Al Qaeda just will just replace him.
Well, they'll replace him. Yeah. I mean, if it's going to that sort of thing always hurts, but it doesn't stop him.
Yeah. Tom in Oshkosh is with us now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Professor. I spent quite a bit of time reading as a civilian the papers on the U.S. Army War College website.
Right.
And what I find interesting is the manuals on fighting wars of counterinsurgency state that the average counterinsurgency that lasts 10 years or longer only has slightly less than 2,000 committed fighters. And it seems to me in Iraq, the insurgency that Sunni has over 30,000, plus you've got, according to the Christian Science Monitor, possibility of 3 or 4 Shi'i militia that will eventually engage in civil war of that number or more. How if in the last 100 years of studying wars of counterinsurgency and writing the manuals from that history, can you win a counterinsurgency of 30,000 when people have been unable to defeat a counterinsurgency of 2,000? Thank you. I'll take the comments offline.
Tom, that's a good comment. It's a good question. According to Petraeus, that's why he feels he needs more troops than what he's got. I mean, when I talked to him and asked him, he said, you know, you probably, instead of 32,000 more troops, they could probably, or 22,000, they could probably use about 100,000 simply to make that, to get the odds better. Petraeus is doing the best he can with what he has. Will he succeed? Right now, it's hard to say. We're centering it in Baghdad, which is an enormous city, and we're setting it in Anbar. Anbar is a plus one. The number of inter-ethnic deaths has gone down considerably. That they look upon as a possible victory. But in order to get that to a point where both sides will be happy with it, it's going to take a lot more than just going to September.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tom, for the call. So, Professor Hirschspring, the president's going to meet with congressional leaders tomorrow to figure out what the next step is with the war funding bill and maybe this compromise with some benchmarks. How do you see this playing out? I mean, how long will it be before the mission is accomplished?
Okay, the argument, the strategy behind what the Democrats are doing is to try and keep the situation hot enough to where they can then pull some Republicans over to their side. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just a tactic that they're using. My suspicion is if by September, when Petraeus comes back and he cannot show significant progress, that the president's going to lose because he's going to have too many Republicans going over to with either Pelosi or Reid. I mean, that's what the two of them are doing right now, is trying to approach Republicans and say, you know, what do you need to come over to our side? And I think that they're going to go ahead and agree to the funding because they have no choice because it's long-term political implications. But then they're going to sit and try and come up with something that will attract more Republicans. That's what they need for the override. As you pointed out before, they don't have enough for the override, but if they can get enough Republicans to say, we've had it, we're getting too much pressure at home, then they can, that they'll win.
Yeah. In the minute before our newscast, in your opinion, is Petraeus going to have some progress to report by September?
Well, he came back and he reported, and what I've read about his testimony, he's very frustrated. He comes back and he said, I've made some progress. We are better off now than we were when we started. And the Democrats said, oh, see, it's not enough progress. There's still big problems. And where the Republicans said, oh, see, he's making progress. In fact, he'll say he's made progress. The question is it going to be enough? I have no idea. I suspect not, simply because this is such a slow, long process to actually win it. That's why I said if we started this strategy 4 years ago, I think we'd have left 2 years ago.
Our guest is Dale Hirschspring, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat, naval officer, author of the upcoming book, The Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, the Neocons, and the American Military. It's due to be released by the end of this year. He's talking with us about the fourth anniversary of the so-called mission accomplished speech and the current situation in Iraq. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio at 7:36 on this Tuesday, May the 1st, the fourth anniversary of the mission accomplished speech by President Bush aboard that aircraft carrier. On this day, President Bush will be receiving a bill from Congress that he has vowed to veto. The Iraq funding bill includes a timetable for U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq. We're talking about what it will really take to accomplish the mission in Iraq with our guest, Dale Hirschspring, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University, who is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat, naval officer, the author of many books, including his forthcoming book, The Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, the Neocons, and the American Military, which is due out by the end of the year. And Professor Hirschspring, while we're talking about the current state of affairs with the war in Iraq, I also want to talk about the news that former CIA Director George Tenet is making. He has a new book out, too, and he talked about that he felt he was being scapegoated by the administration for his slam dunk comment, and he talked about this on 60 Minutes on Sunday with Scott Pelley. And here's George Tenet.
If he needed me to say slam dunk to go to war with Iraq, as if he needed me to say that, and you listen to that, and they never let it go. I mean, I became a campaign talk. I was a talking point. You know, look what the idiot told us, and we decided to go to war. Well, let's not be so disingenuous.
What's your reaction to
that? He's absolutely right. I mean, there's no question that on September 12th, Rumsfeld was talking about going after Iraq. So was Cheney. It was not a matter of if, it was a matter of when they could pull it off. And so I have no question in my mind that the neocons and Rumsfeld basically were determined from the very beginning to go after Iraq, and the president said no. And the statement that he made, what Tenet was actually talking about, was it's a slam dunk. We can make a better public defense of what we're of our policy. That's a slam dunk. He was not talking about taking Iraq, and he's absolutely right. They have used this now for 4 years to say, well, you know, the intelligence committee said it going into Iraq was a slam dunk, when in fact we know that the CIA was completely opposed to most of what happened.
Let's go to Fred in Adams County, who's been waiting. Thanks for waiting, Fred. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy, and thank you for letting me talk. I'll tell you, I watched Jay Leno. I watched Larry King at 60 Minutes. Larry King tried to draw George Tenet out on various things, and he said he was part of the organization, but he wasn't. Five times he asked George Tenet, do we torture? He said no. Five times he denied it. Larry King asked him about waterboarding, different things. He denied it all the time. He denied the slam dunk. It was out of context. He got the Medal of Freedom. I have no idea what for. But I'll sum it up with this comment. I watched Jay Leno last night, and he held up a book at 10:30 last night. He says, well, here's George Tenet's new book. The name of the book is Saving My Own Ass, and I believe that's right. I'll listen off the air.
I don't know if he should have said that on the air, but I'll let it go. I did see that some are saying that he's the former CIA director.
There you go. How can somebody in your job be up that late at night? I don't understand that.
I didn't watch Jay Leno, though.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But as far as the comment that Fred's making, sure, there's a certain amount of that from Tenet. I mean, I don't question that, you know, people who write those kind of books. I've written 12 books now, and it's hard for me to keep my own views out of everything I do as much as I may try. And does the CIA engage in torture? Depends what you mean by torture. And, you know, he said that they didn't, and it's conceivable that a person at his level could well believe that that's the case, whereas something else is going on at a much lower level, that we saw that with the Army. The Medal of Freedom was given to him, I think, is the same reason it was given to our former head of the governmental American governmental group was in Iraq, and that's keeping his mouth shut, and he didn't. He has dumped out, and I mean, the one who's coming out the worst in this whole thing is Cheney, over and over and over.
Yeah, why so? Why do you say that?
Well, because Cheney is the one who has constantly made statements. He, for example, there was a study going on. And whether or not this was really a dangerous, you know, we really should invade Iraq. And he goes and makes a speech and says, you know, that in essence, it's a slam dunk that we have to go and they're doing something, change the whole debate. But Cheney has been unlike any vice president we've had since the 1930s, at least. And that is, he gets involved in policy the way the other ones didn't. The normal thing is a vice president goes in the Oval Office and tells the president privately what he thinks, not that he goes on television, not that he sits at a NSC meeting and sit there and puts down other people if they don't agree with him.
Yeah, didn't Tenet say in these interviews and in his book, I haven't read his book yet, that it never really made sense to him that Iraq had a role in 9/11, yet that's what...
He said that very clearly, and that's also one of Cheney's things, and Cheney was told several times that was nonsense, and he just went right ahead and said it. Look, Cheney is the guy who in 19... It was two years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, was still saying that it was all a facade, that wasn't real, that the Russians were still coming. In fact, you know, I've written a book on the whole Russian military, and believe me, they collapsed completely. And I've talked to too many of them. He has that kind of a attitude that once he's convinced of something, nothing in the world is going to change his mind.
Yeah, well, Tenet's not getting all rave reviews for his revelations. You were hearing former CIA analysts calling for him to return his Medal of Freedom and to donate proceeds, profits from his book to the families of wounded or killed soldiers in Iraq. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I can understand that very well. I haven't been in one of those kind of organizations. The guy on top, if he really felt that strongly about it, instead of making his sort of whining session about making me the scapegoat, he should have done it 3 years ago. He should have done it when the United States decided to invade Iraq. It might have actually had an impact then. And they're saying, you know, when you held this thing, they gave the medal. How do you deserve the medal if you didn't stand up and be counted when the time was right? And this is the same thing a number of people have charged some number of American generals with. Why didn't you stand up and charge? Why did you wait till so much later to speak? Why didn't you stand up and say this is wrong when it was going on?
Yeah. Back to the phones to all of this. Tim in Whitewater is our next caller. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I look forward to reading your book. It sounds very interesting. I have a son at home on leave right now from Iraq, and I have one comment and one question. The one comment is he tells me that in the last 3 months they've found it much easier to recruit the military police, whereas it used to be about 5 a month. Now they're up to 100, so that's changing a little bit. The question is, when I talk to him, and he's worked quite a bit with the Iraqi army, when he describes the violence there, we always keep hearing that it's sectarian violence, civil war. And what he describes to me is more of a gang type thing. I mean, and that's always been a problem in that part of the country, I guess, unless you had somebody like Saddam squelching it. But you got these sheiks that you know are basically thugs, and they control certain areas or regions or whatever in cities, wherever it may be, whether it's rural or urban. And that's still what's going on. So, you know, I my question is, I mean, should we really be calling it civil war and sectarian violence? It doesn't sound like it's always just Shiite against Sunni. It's just thuggery and gang stuff, frankly, we see sometimes here in the inner cities of the United States. And I wonder if that's, you know, if your observation is somewhat along those lines.
Two comments. First, the recruiting of police going up. This is what Petraeus was talking about, with the situation having turned in his mind to a more positive direction. At least we're at the very beginning of the turnaround. As far as the comments you've made about the thuggery, you're absolutely right. I mean, the media, for obvious reasons, oversimplifies and says it's a civil war. It is a civil war, but is it a group one thug against the other? In fact, we think that the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq was killed by another group of thugs, not just the Al-Qaeda. That's going on. There are criminal gangs who kidnap people and then hold them for ransom. Some of the violence, when we see these people, their hands tied behind them, and they all happen to be Sunnis, or all happen to be Shia, then that's pretty clear ethnic violence. But the other kind that you're talking about is clearly going on, because that's what Petraeus is trying to do, is to stabilize Iraq or Baghdad to the point where the citizens will say, well, down there in that house on the left is where these bad guys are, and then you can take them on.
Our guest is Dale Hirschspring. He is a distinguished professor of political science at Kansas State University, talking with us on this fourth anniversary of the mission accomplished speech by President Bush about when we can really say that the mission in Iraq is accomplished. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8, we'll talk about the economy with economics professor Bill Duddleston, coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking about the current state of affairs in Iraq on this, the fourth anniversary of when President Bush declared under a banner that said mission accomplished, that the major combat operations in Iraq were over. By the way, flags are at half-staff in the Outagamie County community of Shiocton today. The community is mourning the loss of 21-year-old Private First Class Nicholas Reel, who was killed in Fallujah, Iraq, on Friday when an improvised explosive device went off during a combat patrol. The death raised the death toll of Wisconsin military personnel from the Iraq War to 71. April was the worst month so far this year in terms of U.S. Military personnel killed. 104 have died in April in Iraq. We're talking with Dale Hirspring, a professor of political science at Kansas State University, welcoming your questions for him about the current situation in Iraq, the impasse between President Bush and Congress on what to do about Iraq, and also talking some about how we got into Iraq based on former CIA directors George Tenet's comments that are in the news these days. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Kurt in Oxford is our next caller. Hi.
All right. Hi. The bill in front of the president right now, his complaint is the pork, and politicians telling the military what to do. As I recall, the Patriot Act was packed with pork, and our generals wanted a minimum of 300,000 troops, but Rumsfeld decided we deal with a lot less. How come nobody's brought this up? And, I mean, the president doesn't see the difference. I that's one thing that confuses me. I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, all right, Kurt, but the president's going to veto this bill because it has a timetable, not necessary. He doesn't
It has a date final, which, you know, troops had to be drawn on certain dates. As far as his comment about it was actually what the military wanted was 400,000 troops, and that was Rumsfeld overrode that. And believe me, it's no big secret. There's about five books, Tom Rick's book, and there's Bob Woodward's book, and a number of others that all go through and make that point very clearly. And as far as the Patriot Act having things attached, of course they were, but the one that frankly was sent to the president or was what came out of the House originally was absolutely obscene by having so much pork attached to it. That was basically what they were doing to try and get the more liberal members of the Democratic Party to support it.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Kurt, for the call. Next is Steve in Superior. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have a comment and a quick question. The comment is, I think the reason that the Democrats, the presidential candidates for Democrats, are having trouble showing up in the polls as on account of this bill is that this bill really doesn't accomplish what the American people voted for, and it also is just loaded with pork. I guess $20 billion in there plus some additional aid for Katrina, et cetera. And I think the American people voted in November to say, look, we've got to come at this at a different angle, but we need to support both the troops and the executive, which is the commander-in-chief. And more importantly, we do have to let the generals handle the strategic issues and tactical issues on the ground over there. And the problem is that they're playing politics for votes, which is causing young men to die on a daily basis. I just sent two really harsh letters to both our senators here, and one which I voted for in the last election when he was up, Senator Feingold. The issue is the blood money and American troops dying while we were playing politics. We need to put our disagreements and our low-grade civil war on hold. So my question is, how do we accomplish what the American people want?
Wow. Good question, Steve. I wish the hell I can answer that one better than I have. The problem is, you know, welcome to the American political system. That's the way the American political system is set up. It's the way it works. The Republicans, if they were in the majority, would do exactly the same thing to try and embarrass the Democrats. And particularly if somebody wore a uniform for 32 years, you get very tired when you see this going on and you know what's causing it. But it simply is the way the American political system works. Let the generals handle the operational and tactical things. That would be nice, and that's what the president's asked for. But the Democrats are doing their best to try and embarrass the president right now. And as far as what people voted for, well, we wouldn't even have had the bill that the president's going to veto if it were not for Iraq and for Rumsfeld's mismanagement of the whole process. That would have been, Republicans would probably still control both the House and the Senate, in which case it would be closer to what you're talking about.
Yeah, but Professor Hirschspring, is it fair to say that the troops are dying while politics is being played? The troops are dying because bombs are going off in this
That's right.
Civil war. It's not because Congress wants to withdraw them.
Well, I think what he was trying to say, and I'm putting words in his mouth, but maybe not be accurate, is if you do what the generals did, you'd have enough troops over there to make a significant difference. Instead of that, the politics is dictating what's going on. But you're absolutely right; it's the IEDs that are killing people, and that's why they've got. For example, there's a new vehicle coming out that apparently is impervious to IEDs. They're trying very hard to stop it because that's about the only way they can get us is with IEDs.
Oh, is that's the Humvee? I think that there's a Wisconsin company that's involved in the manufacture of those too. But what I guess I was also getting at is that maybe that's an example. Is that just because the supplemental funding bill or emergency funding bill for Iraq, the fact that there's this delay over the politics going on doesn't mean that the troops are doing without anything at this moment, does it?
No, what the army's done is what the government always does when they get in this kind of a crisis. They stop buying things, they stop training, they stop a whole lot of other things. Now, how much of that's going on, I honestly don't know. But they start cutting back. And, for example, the Air Force is now talking about if this doesn't pass soon, they're going to cut back on the amount of extra money the guys are getting who are serving in Iraq. And they start doing those kinds of things. Now, does that hamper us militarily? No, it affects morale, but it doesn't hamper us militarily. You've got a point. It's not exactly like Nero fiddling while Rome burns, but it is, in fact, the case that the politics are always going to be center of this something. That's why we set up the government. That's why we set up our government.
Thank you, Steve, for the call. George in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, George.
Yeah, good morning. Not to beat a dead horse, but I would like to mentioned something regarding the lead up to the war has to do with, of course, the Bush administration trying to make the case that Saddam still possessed weapons of mass destruction that he could unleash on the United States and other neighboring countries. I think that, they trot out this idea that many intelligence communities around the Western world did think that Saddam had WMDs. Now, while that may be the case, I think very, very few of them thought that there was any kind of a threat from the WMDs that he may have still possessed. They did not allow the United Nations inspectors to finish their work, to complete their work to basically show that there was no threat. Furthermore, the neighbors of Saddam, including Kuwait and Iran, Syria, were not concerned about his WMDs. In fact, they did not want the United States to invade Iraq. So I think you put those together, and I think that the administration's case that that we went in order to take him out because of WMDs just falls apart.
Well, I mean, it's right. I mean, there's no question about that. The question whether what threat was imminent or not imminent, and the administration said it was. But, the problem with that argument, and there's nothing, he may be completely right in most of the points he's making, is like one of my bosses said to me, woulda, coulda, shoulda, mighta didn't solve a damn thing. And we're there. We've got to figure out what in the heaven's name we're going to do now. And whether you like the administration, you don't like the administration, there has to be some sort of an answer. If we walk out tomorrow, they're going to have a bloodbath. Maybe that's okay. That's one option. If we stay there, are we going to have a strategy that's going to do anything to solve the problem, to stabilize the government? We've given up worrying about democracy. What we want right now is a stable government. And, as the earlier person stated, we don't have that.
Yeah.
And how long it's going to do, the reports now, Maliki is trying to take over, kick all the Sunnis out of the army in the high places. That's not a good sign. They can't figure out how to allocate the petroleum resources. They're supposed to pass a bill on that. you know, the Gates said that the Democrats raising hell back here was doing some good for him when he was over in Iraq and able to say to him, look, you know, our patience is not unlimited. The president's been saying that, and that opens a door that if the president does want to decide, let's say, in 6 months to withdraw forces, that the pressure's on the Iraqi regime. But I suspect they won't have an agreement, primarily because the Shias figure that whenever they leave, they'll be in the majority.
Yeah, and we'll leave it there for now. Our hour is gone, and we appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Dale Hirschspring, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University. His new book, out by the end of the year, will be The Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, the Neocons, and the American Military. Our spring pledge drive starts this Thursday, but you can pledge now online. And your pledge right now will help shorten this drive, because every dollar raised before Thursday will count toward the goal of $275,000. And listeners have already contributed more than $16,000 online. You can join them by pledging online at WPR.org. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.